عالم تهيجي.
Folks, you are listening to WGDR Plainfield, WGDH Hardwick, Central Vermont Community Radio, 91.1 FM and 91.7 FM on your dial. And it's Saturday, folks. It's my favorite day of the week, and it is my pure pleasure and honor and privilege, really, to be here in the studio celebrating kids, celebrating Saturdays, celebrating everything there is to celebrate out there, celebrating you, celebrating me, celebrating being together on this beautiful, beautiful planet. And speaking of planets, we're going to be traveling through space today. This is super exciting. We are on to Chapter 4 in A Wrinkle in Time. That's the book we've been reading by Madeline L'Engle. And we're on Chapter 4. This one's called The Black Thing. And boy, is it an appropriate day for this, because even though it's been gorgeous here in Vermont with lots of sunshine and summertime weather, it's a little bit gloomy this morning, which is actually quite perfect for a little story, and especially for this chapter, which is about the black thing, which is sort of like a cloud of darkness and misery that sometimes shows up on various planets. And Meg, who we've been following through this story, is going to go on an adventure with her brother, Charles Wallace, and her new friend, Kelvin. And of course, their three magical friends, Mrs. What's-It, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Witch. And they're going to be traveling through space to another planet, and they're going to get a look at this black thing that is hovering over some places in the universes and galaxies that go on through time and space. And the reason they have to understand this, of course, is because they're going to rescue their father, who is on the other side of this black thing, or within this black thing. So it's going to be very exciting. We're also going to learn a bit about oxygen, because as Meg is traveling with her friend Mrs. What's-It and her brother and her friend Kelvin up to the top of a mountain to get a really good look at the black thing off in the distance, they're going to go way, way, way up above a super tall mountain. I think this mountain is even taller than the ones we have here on Earth. And, well, when we get up there in that higher altitude, the oxygen level actually decreases. There's less oxygen available. Most of the oxygen is down here by the ground. And boy, do our bodies need oxygen. So we're going to learn a little bit more about that as well. Oxygen is what helps our cells burn the glucose, burn the sugar they need for energy. So there's like little fires going on inside all of our cells, and they need oxygen all the time so that they can have the energy they need to be alive. Isn't that kind of cool? That's why we have a sweet tooth, guys, because our cells need sugar. Well, go get something to eat. Maybe not something too directly sugary. Something you could break down into sugar over time. Here's a great wind song. Thanks for joining me. We're going to celebrate wind.
Different things you did, but always
Put your finger in the air, in the air. Put your finger in the air, in the air. Put your finger in the air, leave it there about a year. Put your finger in the air, in the air. Now put your finger on your head, on your head. Put your finger on your head, on your head. Put your finger on your head, tell me, is it brown or red? Put your finger on your head, on your head. Now put your finger on your nose, on your nose. Put your finger on your nose, on your nose. Put your finger on your nose, leave it there till the warm wind blows. Put your finger on your nose. Now put your finger on your cheek. And put your finger on your cheek, on your cheek. Put your finger on your cheek, leave it there about a week. Put your finger on your cheek, and put your finger on your chin, and put your finger on your chin. Put your finger on your chin, that's where the food slips in. Put your finger on your chin. Now put your finger on your belly, and put your finger on your belly. Put your finger on your belly, tell me, does it shake like jelly? Put your finger on your belly. Now put your finger on your shoe, put your finger on your shoe. Put your finger on your shoe, leave it there a month or two. Put your finger on your shoe. And put your finger on your friend, put your finger on your friend. Put your finger on your friend, leave it there till this song ends. Put your finger on your friend, and put your finger in the air, put your finger in the air, put your finger in the air, leave it there about a year. Put your finger in the air.
Took a monkey for a ride in the air. The monkey thought that everything was on the square. The buzz tried to throw the monkey off his back. The monkey grabbed his neck and said, now listen, Jack. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. What's the use of diving? Ain't no use in jiving. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top.
Buzzard said, monkey, you're choking me. Release your hold and I will set you free.
The monkey looked the buzzard straight in the eye.
Said, your story's so touching, but it sounds like a lie.
Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. What's the use in diving? Ain't no use in jiving. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top.
The monkey scratched his head and said, how am I gonna get off this buzzard? Then he realized, buzzards can't stand singing. So the monkey started to sing.
Bop-a-doop-bop-doop-bop. Bop-a-doop-bop-doop-bop.
He drove that buzzard crazy. He had to put him down.
A buzzard took a monkey for a ride in the air. The monkey thought that everything was on the square. The buzzard tried to throw the monkey off his back. The monkey grabbed his neck and said, now listen, Jack. Straighten up and fly right. Straighten up and fly right.
straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top. What's the use in diving? Ain't no use in jiving. Straighten up and fly right. Cool down, Papa, don't you blow your top.
Welcome back, folks. That was quite an interesting song, wasn't it? A monkey jumping on a buzzard and then choking him, making it hard for him to breathe until he does what he says. Boy, that's not a very fair thing to do, is it? But then he figures out all he has to do is sing, and that the buzzard really doesn't like singing. I think that's kind of funny, because actually air, and what we're talking about here, oxygen and air and wind, you know, it delivers messages. It's what I'm using right now to speak, right? To talk. I have to use air. It has to pass through my throat and past my vocal cords. And so air is a messenger. It brings messages. And so I really like that song about wind, too, that we heard earlier. And did you put your finger in the air? In the air? Did you put your finger everywhere that they said to? Or did you make up your own way of doing that? Sometimes it's fun to try not to follow the directions, right? So anyway, welcome back. We are going to go on to chapter 3, which is why I have this dramatic music. We are about to travel through space with Meg and her brother and her friend and the three magical creatures, because where we left off in Mrs. Witch's chapter, Mrs. Witch appeared and said she has, it's much too tiring for her to materialize. And now they're off. They're just going to go off. So here we go. This is chapter 4, The Black Thing. The trees were lashed into a violent frenzy. Meg screamed and clutched at Kelvin, and Mrs. Witch's authoritative voice called out, "Quiet, child." Did a shadow fall across the moon? Or did the moon simply go out, extinguished as abruptly and completely as a candle? There was still the sound of leaves, a terrified, terrifying rushing. All light was gone. Darkness was complete. Suddenly the wind was gone, and all sound. Meg felt that Kelvin was being torn from her. When she reached for him, her fingers touched nothing. She screamed out, "Charles!" And whether it was to help him or for him to help her, she did not know. The word was flung back down her throat, and she choked on it. She was completely alone. She had lost the protection of Kelvin's hand. Charles was nowhere, either to save or to turn to. She was alone in a fragment of nothingness. No light, no sound, no feeling. Where was her body? She tried to move in her panic, but there was nothing to move. Just as light and sound had vanished, she was gone too. The corporeal Meg simply was not. Then she felt her limbs again. Her legs and arms were tingling faintly, as though they had been asleep. She blinked her eyes rapidly, but though she herself was somehow back, nothing else was. It was not as simple as darkness or absence of light. Darkness has a tangible quality. It can be moved through and felt. In darkness, you can bark your shins. The world of things still exists around you. She was lost in a horrifying void. It was the same way with the silence. This was more than silence. A deaf person can feel vibrations. Here, there was nothing to feel. Suddenly, she was aware of her heart beating rapidly within the cage of her ribs. Had it stopped before? What had made it start again? The tingling in her arms and legs grew stronger, and suddenly she felt movement. This movement, she felt, must be the turning of the earth, rotating on its axis, traveling its elliptic course about the sun. And this feeling of moving with the earth was somewhat like the feeling of being in the ocean. Out in the ocean, beyond this rising and falling of the breakers, lying on the moving water, pulsing gently with the swells, and feeling the gentle, inexorable tug of the moon. I am asleep. I am dreaming, she thought. I'm having a nightmare. I want to wake up. Let me wake up. Well, Charles Wallace's voice said, that was quite a trip. I do think you might have warned us. Light began to pulse and quiver. Meg blinked and shoved shakily at her glasses, and there was Charles Wallace standing indignantly in front of her, his hands on his hips. Meg, he shouted, Kelvin, where are you? She saw Charles, she heard him, but she could not go to him. She could not shove through the strange, trembling light to meet him. Kelvin's voice came as though it were pushing through a cloud. Well, just give me time, will you? I'm older than you are. Meg gasped. It wasn't that Kelvin wasn't there and then that he was. It wasn't that part of him came first and then the rest of him followed, like a hand and then an arm and an eye and then a nose. Instead, it was a sort of shimmering, a looking at Kelvin through water, through smoke, through fire, and then there he was, solid and reassuring. Meg, Charles Wallace's voice came. Meg, Kelvin, where's Meg? I'm right here, she tried to say, but her voice seemed to be caught at its source. Meg, Kelvin cried, and he turned around, looking about wildly. Mrs. Witch, you haven't left Meg behind, have you? Charles Wallace shouted. If you've hurt Meg, any of you, Kelvin started. But suddenly, Meg felt a violent push and a shattering as though she had been thrust through a wall of glass. Oh, there you are, Charles Wallace said, and rushed over to her and hugged her. But where am I? Meg asked breathlessly, relieved to hear that her voice was now coming out of her in more or less a normal way. She looked around rather wildly. They were standing in a sunlit field, and the air about them was moving with the delicious fragrance that comes only on the rarest of spring days, when the sun's touch is gentle and the apple blossoms are just beginning to unfold. She pushed her glasses up on her nose to reassure herself that she was seeing something real. They had left the silver glint of a biting autumn evening, and now, around them, everything was golden with light. The grasses of the field were a tender new green, and scattered about were tiny, multicolored flowers. Meg turned slowly to face a mountain, reaching so high into the sky that its peak was lost in a crown of puffy white clouds. From the trees at the base of the mountain came a sudden singing of birds. There was an air of such ineffable peace and joy all around her that her heart's wild thumping slowed. When shall we three meet again, in thunder, lightning, or in rain? Came Mrs. Who's voice. Suddenly, the three of them were there, Mrs. What's-It, with her pink stole askew, Mrs. Who, with her spectacles gleaming, and Mrs. Witch, still a little more than a shimmer. Delicate, multicolored butterflies were fluttering about them as though in greeting. Mrs. What's-It and Mrs. Who began to giggle, and they giggled until it seemed that whatever their private joke was, they would fall down with the wild fun of it. The shimmer seemed to be laughing, too. It became vaguely darker and more solid, and then there appeared a figure in a black robe and a black peaked hat, beady eyes, a beaked nose, and long gray hair. One bony claw clutched a broomstick. Well, just to keep you girls happy, be, the strange voice said, and Mrs. What's-It and Mrs. Who fell into each other's arms with gales of laughter. if you ladies have had your fun, I think you should tell Kelvin and Meg a little more about all this, Charles Wallace said coldly. You scared Meg half out of her wits, whisking her off this way without any warning. Thinks are not animi raro et parpaca loquentis, Mrs. Who intoned. Horace, to action little, less to words inclined. Mrs. Who, I wish you'd stop quoting, Charles Wallace sounded very annoyed. Mrs. What's-it adjusted her stole. But she finds it so difficult to verbalize, Charles, dear. It helps her if she can quote instead of working out words of her own. And we mustn't lose our senses of humor, Mrs. Witch said. The only way to cope with something deadly serious is to try to treat it a little lightly. But that's going to be hard for Meg, Mrs. What's-it said. It's going to be hard for her to realize that we are serious. What about me? Kelvin asked. The life of your father isn't at stake, Mrs. What's-it told him. What about Charles Wallace, then? Mrs. What's-it, unoiled door hinge voice, was warm with affection and pride. Charles Wallace knows that it's far more than just the life of his father. Charles Wallace knows what's at stake. But remember, Mrs. Who said, Ane ove mave e en lege ex parte. Euripides. Nothing is hopeless. We must hope for everything. Where are we now and how did we get here? Kelvin asked. Uriel, the third planet of the star Moloch on the spiral nebula, Messier 101. This I'm supposed to believe? Kelvin asked indignantly. As you like, Mrs. Witch said coldly. For some reason, Meg felt that Mrs. Witch, despite her looks and ephemeral broomstick, was someone in whom one could put complete trust. It doesn't seem any more peculiar than anything else that's happened. Well then, someone just tell me how we got here. Kelvin's voice was still angry, and his freckles seemed to stand out on his face. Even traveling at the speed of light, it would take us years and years to get here. Oh, we don't travel at the speed of anything, Mrs. What's-it explained earnestly. We tesser, or you might say we wrinkle. Clear as mud, Kelvin said. Tesser, Meg thought. Could that have anything to do with Mother's Tesseract? She was about to ask when Mrs. Witch started to speak. And one did not interrupt when Mrs. Witch was speaking. Mrs. What's-it is young and naive. She keeps thinking she can explain things in words, Mrs. Who said. Qui plus sait plus sait. French, you know. The more a man knows, the less he talks. But she has to use words for Meg and Kelvin, Charles reminded Mrs. Who. If you brought them along, they have a right to know what's going on. Meg went up to Mrs. Witch. In the intensity of her question, she had forgotten all about the Tesseract. Is my father here? Mrs. Witch shook her head. Not here, Meg. Let Mrs. What's-it explain. She is young and the language of words is easier for her than it is for Mrs. Who and me. We stopped here, Mrs. What's-it explained, more or less to catch our breaths and to give you a chance to know what you're up against. But what about Father? Meg asked. Is he all right? For the moment, love, yes. He's one of the reasons we're here, but you see, he's only one. Well, where is he? Please take me to him. We can't. Not yet, Charles said. You have to be patient, Meg. But I'm not patient, Meg said passionately. I've never been patient. Mrs. Who's glasses shone at her gently. If you want to help your father, then you must learn patience. Vitam impande viro, to stake one's life for the truth. That is what we must do. That is what your father is doing, Mrs. Whatsit nodded, her voice, like Mrs. Who's, very serious, very solemn. Then she smiled her radiant smile. Now, why don't you three children wander around and Charles can explain things a little? You're perfectly safe on Uriel. That's why we stopped here to rest. But aren't you coming with us? Meg asked fearfully. There was a silence for a moment. Then Mrs. Witch raised her authoritative hand. Sh-sh-show them, she said to Mrs. What's-it. And at something in her voice, Meg felt prickles of apprehension. Now? Mrs. What's-it asked, her creaky voice rising to a squeak. Whatever it was that Mrs. Witch wanted them to see, it was something that made Mrs. What's-it uncomfortable, too. Now, Mrs. Witch said. They may as well know. Should I change? Mrs. What's-it asked. Better. I hope it won't upset the children too much, Mrs. What's-it murmured, as though to herself. Should I change too? Mrs. What's-it asked. Oh, but I've had such fun in these clothes. But I'll have to admit, Mrs. What's-it is the best at it. Das Werk Labete den Meister, German. The work proves the craftsman. Shall I transform now, too? Mrs. Witch shook her head. Not yet. Not here. You may wait. Now, don't be frightened, loves, Mrs. What's-it said. Her plump little body began to shimmer, to quiver, to shift. The wild colors of her clothes became muted, whitened. The pudding bag shape stretched, lengthened, and merged, and suddenly, before the children, was a creature more beautiful than any Meg had ever imagined, and the beauty lay in far more than the outward description. Outwardly, Mrs. What's-it was surely no longer a Mrs. What's-it. She was a marble white body with powerful flanks, something like a horse, but at the same time completely unlike a horse. For from the magnificently modeled back sprang a nobly formed torso, arms, and a head resembling a man's, but a man with a perfection of dignity and virtue, an exaltation of joy such as Meg had never seen before. No, she thought, it's not like a Greek centaur, not in the least. From the shoulders, slowly, a pair of wings unfolded. Wings made of rainbows, of light upon water, of poetry. Kelvin fell to his knees. No, Mrs. What's-it said, though her voice was not Mrs. What's-it's voice. Not to me, Kelvin. Never to me. Stand up. Carry them, Mrs. Witch commanded. With a gesture both delicate and strong, Mrs. What's-it knelt in front of the children, stretching her wings wide and holding them steady, but quivering. On to my back now, the new voice said. The children took hesitant steps toward the beautiful creature. But what do we call you now? Kelvin asked. Oh, my dears, came the new voice, a rich voice with the warmth of a woodwind, the clarity of a trumpet, the mystery of an English horn. You can't go on changing my name each time I metamorphose, and I've had such a pleasure being Mrs. What's-it. I think you'd better keep to that. She, he, it smiled at them, and the radiance of the smile was as tangible as a soft breeze, as directly warming as the rays of the sun. Come, Charles Wallace clambered up. Meg and Kelvin followed him, Meg sitting between the two boys. A tremor went through the great wings, and then Mrs. What's-it lifted, and they were moving through the air. Meg soon found that there was no need to cling to Charles Wallace or Kelvin. The great creature's flight was serenely smooth. The boys were eagerly looking around the landscape. Look, Charles Wallace pointed. The mountains are so tall that you can't see where they end. Meg looked upwards, and indeed the mountain seemed to be reaching into infinity. They left the fertile fields and flew across the great plateau of granite-like rock, shaped into enormous monoliths. These had a definite, rhythmic form, but they were not statues. They were like nothing Meg had ever seen before, and she wondered if they had been made by wind and weather, by the formation of this earth, or if they were a creation of beings like the one on which she rode. They left the great granite plain and flew over a garden even more beautiful than anything in a dream. In it were gathered many of the creatures, like the one Mrs. Wutsit had become, some lying among the flowers, some swimming in a broad crystal river that flowed through the garden, and some flying in what Meg was sure must be a kind of dance, moving in and out above the trees. They were making music, music that came not only from their throats, but from the movement of their great wings as well. "What are they singing?" Meg asked excitedly. Mrs. Wutsit shook her beautiful head. "It won't go into your words. I can't possibly transfer it to your words. Are you getting any of it, Charles?" Charles Wallace sat very still on the broad back, on his face an intently listening look. The look he had when he delved into Meg or his mother. "A little, just a very little, but I think I could get more in time." "Yes, you could learn it, Charles, but there isn't time. We can only stay here long enough to rest up and make a few preparations." Meg hardly listened to her. "I want to know what they're saying. I want to know what it means." "Try, Charles," Mrs. Wutsit urged. "Try to translate. You can let yourself go now. You don't have to hold back." "But I can't," Charles Wallace cried in an anguished voice. "I don't know enough, not yet." "Then try to work with me, and I'll see if I can't verbalize it a little for them." Charles Wallace got his look of probing, of listening. "I know that look," Meg thought suddenly. "Now I think I know what it means, because I've had it myself sometimes, doing math with Father, when a problem is just about to come clear." Mrs. Wutsit seemed to be listening to Charles' thoughts. "Well, yes, that's an idea. I can try. Too bad you don't really know it, so you can give it to me direct, Charles. It's so much more work this way." "Don't be lazy," Charles said. Mrs. Wutsit did not take offense. She explained, "Oh, it's my favorite kind of work, Charles. That's why they chose me to go along, even though I'm so much younger. It's my one real talent, but it takes a tremendous amount of energy, and we're going to need every ounce of energy for what's ahead of us. But I'll try, for Kelvin and Meg, I'll try." She was silent. The great wings almost stopped moving. Only a delicate stirring seemed to keep them aloft. "Listen, then," Mrs. Wutsit said. The resonant voice rose, and the words seemed to be all around them, so that Meg felt that she could almost reach out and touch them. "Sing unto the Lord a new song, and his praise from the end of the earth, ye that go down to the sea, and all that is therein, the isles and the inhabitants thereof. Let the wilderness and the cities thereof lift their voice. Let the inhabitants of the rock sing. Let them shout from the top of the mountains. Let them give glory unto the Lord." Throughout her entire body, Meg felt a pulse of joy such as she had never known before. Kelvin's hand reached out. He did not clasp her hand in his. He moved his fingers so that they were barely touching hers. But joy flowed through them, back and forth between them, and about them, and inside them. When Mrs. Wutsit sighed, it seemed completely incomprehensible that through this bliss could come the faintest whisper of doubt. "We must go now, children," Mrs. Wutsit's voice was deep with sadness, and Meg could not understand. Raising her head, Mrs. Wutsit gave a call, and that seemed to be a command, and one of the creatures flying above the trees nearest them raised his head to listen, and then flew off and picked three flowers from a tree growing near the river, and brought them over. "Each of you take one," Mrs. Wutsit said. "I'll tell you how to use them later." As Meg took her flower, she realized that it was not a single blossom, but hundreds of tiny flowerets, forming a kind of hollow bell. "Where are we going?" Kelvin asked. "Up." The wings moved steadily, swiftly. The garden was left behind. The stretch of granite, the mighty shapes, and then Mrs. Wutsit was flying upward, climbing steadily up, up. Below them, the trees of the mountain dwindled, became sparse, were replaced by bushes and then small, dry grasses. And then vegetation ceased entirely, and there were only rocks, points and peaks of rock, sharp and dangerous. "Hold on tight," Mrs. Wutsit said. "Don't slip." Meg felt Kelvin's arm circle her waist in a secure hold. Still, they moved upwards. Now they were in the clouds. They could see nothing but drifting whiteness, and the moisture clung to them and condensed in icy droplets. As Meg shivered, Kelvin's grip tightened. In front of her, Charles Wallace sat quietly. Once he turned just long enough to give her a swift glance of tenderness and concern. But Meg felt, as each moment passed, that he was growing farther and farther away, that he was becoming less and less her adored baby brother, and more one with whatever kind of being Mrs. What's-It, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Which in actuality were. Abruptly, they burst out of the clouds into a shaft of light. Below them, there were still rocks. Above them, the rocks seemed to continue to reach up into the sky, but now, though it seemed miles upward, Meg could see where the mountain at last came to an end. Mrs. What's-It continued to climb, her wings straining a little. Meg felt her heart racing. Cold sweat began to gather on her face, and her lips felt as though they were turning blue. She began to gasp. "All right, children, use your flowers now," Mrs. What's-It said. "The atmosphere will continue to get thinner from now on. Hold the flowers up to your face and breathe through them, and they will give you enough oxygen. It won't be as much as you're used to, but it will be enough for now." Meg had almost forgotten the flowers and was grateful to realize that she was still clasping them, that she hadn't let them fall from her fingers. She pressed her face into the blossoms and breathed deeply. Kelvin still held her with one arm, but he, too, held the flowers to his face. Charles Wallace moved the hand with the flowers slowly, almost as though he were in a dream. Mrs. Wutsit's wings strained against the thinness of the atmosphere. The summit was only a little way above them, and then they were there. Mrs. Wutsit came to rest on a small plateau of smooth and silvery rock. There ahead of them was a great white disk. "One of Uriel's moons," Mrs. Wutsit told them, her voice mighty, her voice faintly breathless. "Oh, it's beautiful," Meg cried. "It's beautiful." The silver light from the enormous moon poured over them, blending with the golden quality of the day, flowing over the children, over Mrs. Wutsit, over the mountain peak. "Now we will turn around," Mrs. Wutsit said. And at the quality of her voice, Meg was afraid again. But when they turned, she saw nothing. Ahead of them was the thin, clear blue of sky. Below them, the rocks thrusting out of the shifting sea of white clouds. "Now we will wait," Mrs. Wutsit said, "for sunset and moonset." Almost as she spoke, the light began to deepen, to darken. "I want to watch the moon set," Charles Wallace said. "No, child, do not turn around, any of you. Face out towards the dark. What I have to show you will be more visible then. Look ahead, straight ahead, as far as you can possibly look." Meg's eyes ached from the strain of looking and seeing nothing. Then, above the clouds which circled the mountain, she seemed to see a shadow, a faint thing of darkness so far off that she was scarcely sure she was really seeing it. Charles Wallace said, "What's that?" "That sort of shadow out there?" Kelvin gestured. "What is it? I don't like it." "Watch," Mrs. What's-It commanded. It was a shadow. Nothing but a shadow. It was not even as tangible as a cloud. Was it cast by something, or was it a thing in itself? The sky darkened. The gold left the light, and they were surrounded by blue, blue deepening, until where there had been nothing but the evening sky, there was now a faint pulse of star, and then another, and then another. There were more stars than Meg had ever seen before. "The atmosphere is so thin here," Mrs. What's-It said, as though to answer her unasked question, "that it does not obscure your vision as it would at home. Now look, look straight ahead." Meg looked. The dark shadow was still there. It had not lessened or dispersed with the coming of night. And where the shadow was, the stars were not visible. What could there be about a shadow that was so terrible that she knew that there had never been before or ever would be again anything that would chill her with a fear that was beyond shuddering, beyond crying or screaming, beyond the possibility of comfort? Meg's hand holding the blossom slowly dropped, and it seemed as though a knife gashed through her lungs. She gasped, but there was no air for her to breathe. Darkness glazed her eyes and her mind, but as she started to fall into unconsciousness, her head dropped down into the flowers which she was still clutching. And as she inhaled the fragrance of their purity, her mind and body revived, and she sat up again. The shadow was still there, dark and dreadful. Kelvin held her hand strongly in his, but she felt neither strength nor reassurance in his touch. Beside her, a tremor went through Charles Wallace, but he sat very still. "He shouldn't be seeing this," Meg thought. "This is too much for so little a boy, no matter how different and extraordinary a little boy." Kelvin turned, rejecting the dark thing that blotted out the light of the stars. "Make it go away, Mrs. What's-It," he whispered. "Make it go away. It's evil." Slowly, the great creature turned around so that the shadow was behind them, so that they saw only the stars unobscured, the soft throb of starlight on the mountain, the descending circle of the great moon swiftly slipping over the horizon. Then, without a word from Mrs. What's-It, they were traveling downward, down, down. When they reached the corona of clouds, Mrs. What's-It said, "You can breathe without the flowers now, my children." Silence again. Not a word. It was as though the shadow had somehow reached out with its dark power and touched them so that they were incapable of speech. When they got back to the flowery field, bathed now in starlight and moonlight from another, smaller, yellower rising moon, a little of the tenseness went out of their bodies, and they realized that the body of the beautiful creature on which they rode had been rigid as well as theirs. With a graceful gesture, it dropped to the ground and folded its great wings. Charles Wallace was the first to slide off. "Mrs. Who? Mrs. Which?" he called, and there was an immediate quivering in the air. Mrs. Who's familiar glasses gleamed at them, and Mrs. Which appeared too, but as she had told the children, it was difficult for her to materialize completely, and though there was the robe and peaked hat, Meg could look through them to mountain and stars. She slid off Mrs. What's-It's back and walked, rather unsteadily after the long ride, over to Mrs. Which. "That dark thing we saw," she said, "is that what my father is fighting?" Ooh, the end of this chapter, guys. Wow, that is another cliffhanger. But don't worry, because next week is super exciting, too. We're going to find out about the Tesseract. What is a Tesseract? Our long-awaited question is going to be answered. And don't you just love the way those flowers were giving those kids enough oxygen to breathe up there, way up on the mountain? Well, flowers don't literally do that, although in a way they do, right? Plants give us oxygen because they breathe in our carbon dioxide. They breathe in our carbon dioxide and give us back oxygen. And then we breathe in the oxygen and give them back carbon dioxide. So we and the plants do have sort of a partnership, a deal going. And we help each other out because we love each other, of course. So we're going to go on with some music. I've got a wind chant coming up next, which is going to call winds from the four directions to blow the big bad wolf away. If you know about the big bad wolf, well, this is the big bad wolf that's going after the pigs. And the winds, we have to call the winds, guys, to help save our friends, the pigs. So thank you for joining me. Let's go save some pigs and get your wind ready, guys. Here we go.
Having barely survived the winds.
Greetings, Earth cats. We have arrived.
We're cosmic cats from outer space, just checking out the human race. What's this we hear? Could it be true? Too many cats on Earth are blue. Cosmic cats.
Remember that you're standing on a planet that's evolving, revolving at 900 miles an hour. It's orbiting at 19 miles per second, so it's reckoned a sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that you can see are moving at a million miles a day. In an outer spiral arm at 40,000 miles an hour, in a galaxy they call the Milky Way. The Milky Way. Our galaxy contains 100 billion stars. It's 100,000 light years side to side. It bulges in the middle, 16,000 light years thick, but out by us it's just 3,000 light years wide. We're 30,000 light years from galactic central point. We go round every 200 million years, and this galaxy is only one of millions and billions in this amazing and expanding universe. The universe itself keeps on expanding and expanding in all of the directions it can whiz. As fast as it can go, at the speed of light, you know, 12 million miles a minute, and that's the fastest speed there is. So remember when you're feeling very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth. And sink your roots deep into the galaxy dance of life, planet Earth. And sink your roots deep into reality, dance your life for planet
Earth. On King Street, another one on Henry. Take a look around us for anyone we know. The day is just a dream, I wonder what it will be. The morning sun could take us anywhere we wanna go. Side by side, the streets are green and white. Up the hill and down again. Hand in hand, we'll be feeling grand when we wander in the summer wind. Take you to the river, maybe down to Red Hook. Eat a few tamales over by the soccer games. Basketballs are flying over by the schoolyard. I hear the breeze call your name. High and low, people that we know, they say, hey there, and how have you been? Good, good, good. And do you think you would like to wander in the summer wind? We could take the F train right on up to 9th Street. Walk on through the park to where steel drums play. Dance around in circles with anyone that we meet. Oh, this could happen on a summer Saturday. Talk, 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 resting on a rock. Where we're going and where we've been. Back and forth, south to the north. When we wander in the summer wind. When the water walk is over, we'll sit out on the front steps, laugh about our journey, and sing a song or two. Cotton Eye Joe, do you believe in magic? On a lazy afternoon, almost any song will do. 1, 2, 3, A, B, C, D, E. We'll see it all, my friend. We've got time, put your hand in mine. We'll go wander in the summer wind. We'll go wander in the summer wind.
Welcome back, folks. This is the end of Amy's Kids Show. We've been having a great time. I was just dancing around the studio here, celebrating our expanding universe. Remember, you're in an expanding universe. Isn't this exciting, guys? And now we're traveling through time and space with Meg and all her friends in A Wrinkle in Time. And that was really so much fun. But of course, remember to also celebrate the summer wind here on Earth. Earth is an amazing place to be, where there's tons of people who are courageous and tons of people who are using their wind, their air, to communicate, right? And also to breathe. And we've also been celebrating how wonderful it is to breathe all this wonderful oxygen that actually gravity holds, the oxygen that all the plants make for us. They make oxygen for us. And it all sort of hovers down here through gravity near the surface of the Earth. And so we have the perfect amount of oxygen here to breathe. And if we were to climb a really tall mountain where the air gets really thin, it's going to be more difficult to breathe because there's not as much oxygen up there. And so also other things can block us from getting oxygen, even if we don't climb a big mountain. Let's say we have a monkey on our back, like that buzzard in the song earlier, right, who's grabbing us around the neck. Well, that would make it hard to breathe. Have you ever gotten a back ride, you know, hopped on somebody's back and had them ride you around when you were a kid? Maybe you're still a kid and somebody still gives you those piggyback rides, right? Well, you know where to put your arms, right? You don't put them around the person's neck. That could block their throat, and that would make it hard for them to breathe. So of course you put your arms maybe around their shoulders, you know, somewhere else. If you're hugging somebody, you want to be careful with their neck. You also want to be careful not to cover people's noses or mouths, you know, especially babies. If they're sleeping, we want to be careful about putting a blanket, you know, over them and make sure it doesn't cover their face, because actually children and babies and children, they need more oxygen than even grown-ups, right? Because they're growing. Their cells are not only staying alive and burning the sugar, the glucose, to stay alive and to have energy, but they're actually growing. They're actually constantly growing more cells, more than adults are. And so kids actually need more oxygen per pound of body weight. So it's very important that we have enough air to breathe. And sometimes if people are having a problem getting enough air, maybe they have asthma, or maybe something's covering their face, or maybe they're climbing a mountain. Well, here are some of the ways to know that your body tells you that there's an emergency, right? It might be hard to breathe. Like Meg was having difficulty breathing, so was Mrs. What's-It up there in the thin air. We might feel dizzy or tired. Our heart might start to race. Our blood pumps harder, so our pressure goes up. And that can give us a headache, right? Sometimes you get a headache from that, and sometimes you feel kind of confused. So definitely let people know if that's happening, folks. We need to breathe. We need to breathe so we can think, so we can grow, so our cells have energy, and so we can speak and communicate. Tell the world how you feel. Express yourself. And that's what Amy's Kids Show is all about. Express yourself. So thank you for joining me. We're almost out of time, and we'll see you next week for the next chapter, The Tesseract, which I am so excited to share with you and tell you what that is. Thanks for joining me, guys. Have a wonderful Saturday. You're the greatest.
I saw you toss the kites on high and blow the birds about the sky, and all around I heard you pass.
Your dial's tuned to 91.1 WGDR Plainfield, WGDA.